All right, let's talk a little bit about the governor's race. We're going to talk tax reform in a minute, but we're going to start off with the governor's race. I want to welcome back to the studio Daniel Erspommer from the Pellick Institute. Welcome. How are you, man?
Hey, it's good to be here. I'm doing great.
Glad. I love when you're in studio. It's so much more fun when we're face-to-face. We cover a lot of ground. I love a new poll out in the governor's race.
We do.
It's kind of juicy.
It's fun.
It is. So not released for public consumption yet, so it's a little sneak preview,
This is breaking. That's right. It'll come out later today.
Okay. Let's dive in. What does the poll tell us?
All right. So here's our top lines. Let me first say what we put a poll in the field last week, mostly to understand where are voters on the issues. So as you know, we've been talking about the Pellick Institute's Louisiana's comeback agenda. Mm-hmm. These are issues that we'll talk about in a minute, like tax reform and school choice and all of those things. So we want to know where are voters and how important are those issues to the election. So that's where we started. But of course, we could not resist finding out where voters are on the governor's race as well.
Yes.
Okay. So here we go with all that tease. So top line, here we go. Jeff Landry, 30%.
Okay.
Sean Wilson, 18%.
Okay.
Hunter Lundy, 7%. John Schroeder, 7%. Stephen Wagaspak, 6%. Sharon Hewitt, 5%. Richard Nelson, 2%. And here's maybe the headline.
Mm-hmm.
Uncertain,
21%. 21% uncertain.
We are within 30 days of the election.
That is correct. We were within 2 weeks of early voting up. And 21% still uncertain. There was a Fox 8 poll that I was talking about earlier in the show where I believe that number was somewhere around, was it 17%?
I think that's right.
Yeah. And crazily enough, the difference in support for Jeff Landry is about 10% between this poll done by Core Strategies and the Fox 8 poll. That's a big variance right there, 40 down to 30. Bigger variance and a bigger alarm that should be going off is on the Democrat side, where Sean Wilson's polling at 18% here. He was 24.5% in the Fox 8 poll. Daniel, you were telling me during the break, though, you could break down those unsure into what?
Yeah, so this is interesting. Of Democrat voters, 25% are unsure.
Mm-hmm.
Sean Wilson is polling 40% of Democrat voters in our poll. Jeff Landry is polling 8%. Hunter Lundy is polling 11% of Democrat voters in our poll.
Mm-hmm.
Similarly, interestingly, on independents, 25% of independents unsure who they're voting for. Jeff Landry polls 31% of independents. Sean Wilson polls 8% of independents.
This is stacking up for Sean Wilson having a problem.
It doesn't look great. These numbers are not great for a lone Democrat candidate 2 weeks out from early voting.
So that's worth reiterating right there. You have 25% of Democrats are undecided right now.
That's right.
And they're undecided between the one Democrat in the race. That baffles me. You've got one choice, one and one choice only. Like, how can you be undecided about something where there are no choices?
It's perplexing. And, you know, I think, what a lot of folks are seeing on the campaign trail, on the airwaves, there's not a lot of energy there, not a lot of momentum in the Wilson camp. As we look, the thing that's been sort of astounding to me about all these polls is how little movement there's been in the whole campaign cycle.
Okay, so that leaves me wondering how accurate all the polls are.
Yeah.
All of them. Everyone from start to finish. Because to see this little movement, Moon Griffon and I were talking about this last week, to see this boring of a race and knowing full well what state we live in, like some shoe is going to drop that puts Zan John in the governor's mansion.
I mean, that's kind of what.
By the way,
Zan
John is a character you will find about halfway down the ballot. he'll probably get friends and family votes.
That's right.
But he shows up for a lot of elections, and he's got a fun name.
He's consistent. You got to give him that.
The thing about Sean Wilson, he's the only Democrat in the race. He's a good dude.
Yeah.
He has struggled in his position to do anything really significant until the COVID dollars started coming in. COVID dollars come in, orange barrels go up. Okay, right. We get that. But man.
And just to give some background for folks, this is a poll of 1,023 people.
Okay.
Conducted last week from Monday to Wednesday. This is a mix of live calls, both to landlines and cell phones, and an online panel.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a mix of a variety of different approaches to gathering data. We wanted a big enough sample to try to get some real numbers. But you're right. you know, there's been questions certainly over the last two election cycles about how accurate polling is. And so, you know,
it's not on the pollsters. It's not on the pollsters. They're taking a snapshot in time. We talk with John Cuvion about this all the time. A poll is a snapshot in time.
Yep.
And, man, that Hunter Lundy at 7%. Hunter Lundy's been such a fascinating candidate because he has moments of brilliance and then moments where it's like, does he know that was out loud?
That's right. I will say he's an exceptionally nice guy.
Super nice. Super nice. He's given me his business card 8-9 times by now.
You know, that's the other interesting thing about this field, I think. I know all of them relatively well, and they're all really easy, interesting people to talk to.
Yes, and they all have their strengths.
That's right.
And they're showing up in glimpses, bursts.
That's right. And that's why it's maybe a little surprising it's been such a, I mean, I hate to say it's been a boring race, but.
Well, and the most outspoken, the most over the top is Richard Nelson, and he's polling with the least.
That's right.
I think it's the age thing. I'm about 90% sure it's the age thing. But there's also this little nugget. There are three candidates from St. Tammany Parish in the top seven.
That's right.
Bro, you got to know, like, there's not enough room to go swimming in this pool.
Absolutely. I mean, certainly it's the arguably the largest, most consistent base for a Republican candidate, but when it's split three ways.
Exactly. By the way, those other two candidates from St. Tammany are John Schroeder and Sharon Hewitt. Sharon Hewitt has been one who, again, flashes of brilliance, but when you see her at town hall meetings and what and such, I was at one in West Baton Rouge with the West Baton Rouge Chamber a couple of weeks ago, and I was standing next to a guy, and Sharon Hewitt was talking. And at one point, I leaned over, like, that was brilliant. And he leans back to me and says, I stopped paying attention like 3 minutes ago.
Yeah. You know, and if you've watched any of the debates, the one this last week, it's a bizarre series of questions that didn't. Friday night.
Yeah.
You know, didn't, from at least my perspective, address any of the major issues that at least we think and our poll suggests voters are interested in talking about. The one before that, you know, was so quick and rapid. You know, they asked these.
Well, also stacked up with questions and opinions on the front end.
That's right.
Goodness gravy.
You know, I'm a debate nerd. I like them. Like, I enjoy it. I've moderated them. I've done them. You know, I've participated in them. I think they're great when well produced.
Mm-hmm.
The problem is, I suspect, to get all the candidates to agree, they have to agree to a variety of different constraints on the moderators. And then, you know, the moderators just have a point of view all the time. And all of that often gets in the way of voters actually hearing a straight answer about what is your vision for the state?
And that's part of where we're at right now. That's probably why you're seeing 21% undecided, is because we can get the what, but we can't get the how.
Yeah.
The how takes more than a 90-second soundbite.
Yeah. Yeah, that's right. And it certainly takes more than a yes or no question, you know, when they try to do these lightning round things. And I get it, but, you know, do you support some complicated thing, yes or no?
Meanwhile, the debate's going on while Catholic and U-High are playing.
That's right.
You don't do that Friday night in the fall in Louisiana belongs to high school football.
That's right.
It's frustrating. Let's talk issues for just a minute.
Yeah. So here's the good news. You know, what we want to understand, you know where we are. We feel very strongly about these things. We believe we are on the cusp of some really significant transformation, or at least that's what's needed in our state to write Louisiana's comeback story. And so the other thing today is we're releasing our very detailed tax plan. And so we wanted to know, is there demand for this? Do voters care? Here's the good news. They do. The income tax phase out has 60%. Over 60% agree that the income tax should be phased out. The other question, you know, we talked a lot about the budget, right? Mm-hmm. These are two sides of the same coin. If we can't get the budget in order, it makes it very, very hard to actually get the tax situation in order.
Very true.
And the good news is you're seeing 67% of voters agree with constraining the budget, and only 9% disagree. That had actually the biggest margin of support of any question in our poll, was getting the budget in order. And, you know, look, this fight was ugly in the waning days of the legislature. And I think, you know, this is an issue a lot of voters usually don't pay much attention to.
Yeah.
The state budget. And I think maybe the one good thing that came out of that nonsense was voters saw the ugliness and what happens when you have so much money flowing around and they didn't like it. So I think, you know, what I hope all candidates hear is there's a mandate for significant reform, no matter who wins at the end of the day.
We get Daniel Erspommer in studio. We're talking about this poll that will be released later on today. It dives into a number of different issues as well as the governor's race. One of the issues that y'all talk about here, education savings accounts.
Yeah.
25% opposed.
Yeah.
Had
the highest opposed, but again, you know, we're talking about over 50%, almost 60% or a little over 60% rather in support.
Yeah, yeah. No, I get that end of it, but 25% opposed.
Yep.
To education savings accounts. That it just feels like a big number to me. We've got 1 minute till we break. Can I keep you till 8 o'clock?
Yeah,
I'd love stick that. Around for another segment. We'll talk about tax reform.
That sounds great.
Oh, got a couple of extra minutes here with Daniel Erspommer from the Pelican Institute. Thanks for sticking around for a little bit. I appreciate
of course.
It.
Happy to.
Well, we start talking about the governor's race, and
that's right.
Before we know it, the segment's over with. All right, let's talk tax reform.
Yeah,
this is a big part of the Solution Summit every year, seemingly.
Absolutely.
Where are we at with tax reform? Because when you talk about, I think I just closed out my dead gummit. There it is. When you talk about tax reform, within the poll, phasing out the income tax was very popular.
Yes.
But how do we get there?
That's right. And, you know, the sad truth is the debate about this over the last couple of years has been, well, what do you replace it with, right? So let's put some facts on the table. Sorry for those driving. Don't fall asleep. But we've got $4.5 billion, roughly, is what's collected in the personal income tax
right
today. So what I want to do, though, is look. So the question is, what do you do with that? So the Pelican Institute plan at a top line. Step one, we've kind of got this in two phases. Step one is get to a flat tax immediately.
Sure.
And that does a few things. One is it sets the table. It makes phase out much easier than when you're trying to calculate two or three different brackets and, you know, just the mechanics of phase out become easier. But even more importantly, just getting to a flat tax has a huge economic growth benefit.
Okay.
And so one of the things we did in this was hired an economic modeling firm to come in and do what's called a dynamic score of this. It tells us not just, you know, the up and down of the revenue, but it actually tells us what impact might this have on the economy, right?
Mm-hmm.
Just getting to a flat tax in year one alone adds 4,000 new jobs for Louisiana families and over $1 billion in new economic activity.
Okay.
That's a great thing.
Yeah.
Right. That's that. And this is the question, I think, instead of, and we'll get to the revenue, the nuts and bolts of it. But instead of asking, how do we replace the revenue? The question should be, what's best for Louisiana families, not what's best for Louisiana government?
yes.
You know, and that's what happens is you get in that big pointy building down the street and the question becomes, what's good for Louisiana government? And that's exactly the wrong question to answer.
Well, because Louisiana government is made up of, or Louisiana is not just made up of the state government. We are made up of a number of parishes, cities, towns,
that's
municipalities,
right,
and the like, and everything funnels through that building across downtown rather than being handled on a local level.
Yeah.
We have to stop top-downing everything.
This is, you know, the 100-year legacy of Huey Long, mm-hmm, in Louisiana that really has to be turned around here in the next four or five
so how
years.
Do you free up municipalities to be able to handle their own business?
Well, so you know, to me, those are two different questions that you can answer together. How do you deal with tax, and how do you free up municipalities? Those are both really important things to answer. The answer to how do you free them up is this requires some constitutional change,
mm-hmm,
and we've got to give locals more ability. And let me be clear about this: it's not just local governments; it's local taxpayers, local voters,
of course,
more ability to chart their own fate if they want a new park, if they want to give teachers a raise. By the way, a good reminder that teachers, all of whom deserve, or at least the excellent teachers out there, deserve not just a little pay raise, but a big pay raise. They are employees of their local school board, not
correct,
the state government.
Correct.
So these conversations, because exactly as you're saying, we've done it the wrong way, all end up in that building instead of where they belong.
We got about 1 minute to go when it comes to tax reform. How much more could you squeeze in a minute?
Yeah, I'll do it quickly. So basically the idea is to constrain the spending, right? We went from $28 billion to $50 billion in spending in this state in 8 years.
Yep.
4.5 million people. That's absurd.
Mm-hmm.
And so even if we had just constrained spending to something like population and inflation, we could have phased out the income tax already. So what we're suggesting, we believe this can happen between 7 and 8 years if you just constrain state spending to a population and inflation. So it can grow by the rate of population. It can grow by the rate of inflation. And use surpluses to buy down that rate over time. You don't have to replace it with something else.
He is Daniel Erspommer from the Pelican Institute. We always appreciate the time. We'll be on the lookout for the release of the poll later on today. Thank you so much.
Good to be with you.